Good evening, and thank you for joining us for the regular City Council meeting of Monday, September 23rd, 2024. This meeting may also be viewed on Channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on slow-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by attending the meeting or calling 805-321-6639. 805-321-6639. So we'll begin with a flag salute. And tonight our flag salute will be presented by Camila Landeros. If you'd like to come forward, please. I'll tell you a little bit about Camila. She's 11 years old and in the sixth grade at Fairgrove Elementary School. Her favorite subjects in school are art, social studies, and history. She loves living on the Central Coast because of the weather and the beach. After college, she would like to become a marine biologist. She wants to dive and explore the ocean. Outside of her interests, her school interests, she likes to play the drums, do ballet, horseback riding, and crafts. You're very well-rounded. Tonight, she is accompanied by her mom, Laura, and her dad, Ricardo. Okay, honey, whenever you're ready, if you would all please rise.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hey, good, thank you. Now, if you just come around over here, we're going to take a picture. Very good. Thank you all. Okay, let's move on to roll call, please. City Clerk, if you'd be so kind.
Councilmember Rushing.
Here.
Councilmember Weirich.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Here.
Mayor Bright.
I'm here. Thank you. So we'll move on now to closed session announcement. City Attorney Lomeli, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Council, there were no reportable actions taken during closed session.
Thank you. Okay, we'll now move on to our agenda review. This is where council or staff would make changes or pull any items to the order of the day. Does anybody have any questions or changes?
No.
Very good. If someone will be kind enough to make a motion to adopt the agenda, please.
Sure, I'll move to adopt the agenda as distributed.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? None? Very good. Move on. Next on the agenda is our ceremonial calendar. Our first is a proclamation for National Recovery Month. This will be accepted by Renee. Thank you. Very much. The executive director of Casa Solana, and I have asked Councilmember Weirich if he'd be kind enough to read that for us.
Thank you, Mayor. It's my pleasure to read the proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council proclaiming September as National Recovery Month. Whereas National Recovery Month, also known as Recovery Month, which started in 1989, is a national observation held every September to promote and support new evidence-based treatment and recovery practices, and the dedication of service providers and communities who make recovery in all of its forms possible. And whereas behavioral health is an essential part of one's overall health and wellness. And whereas recovery from substance use disorders and mental health challenges is a courageous journey that deserves recognition and celebration. And whereas treatment and support services are available to help individuals achieve and sustain recovery, demonstrating that recovery is possible. And whereas the Grover Beach community is committed to promoting awareness, support, and access to services for those in need of recovery. And whereas we recognize four dimensions of recovery from mental health and substance use disorders, which are health, home, purpose, and community. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby officially proclaim the month of September as Recovery Month, and we call upon all residents, community organizations, healthcare providers, businesses, and educational institutions to join in supporting individuals on their journey to recovery and to take action to remove the barriers that hinder access to treatment and support services.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Would you care to come forward and speak a bit on the matter? Yes, please.
And my name is Renee Poyer. I'm the executive director of Casa Solana. And on behalf of Casa Solana, we'd like to thank the city of Grover Beach for the proclamation. Casa Solana was the first women's recovery home here on the Central Coast, and we were established in 1985. We are still one of the – actually, I think we are the only one here in Grover Beach that is a social model recovery residence for women only. And as any of us in the community can tell, there's a lot of addiction in our community, but recovery is also alive and well in our community. And our belief is that when we help one woman get clean off of drugs and alcohol, we're not only helping that woman, we're helping their family and generations to come, which kind of goes out into our whole community. So we are proud of what we do, and I'm honored to be able to accept this.
Thank you. We really appreciate what you do. Would you come forward for a picture? Thank you. Now we'll move on to the proclamation for Fire Prevention Month. This will be accepted by our Five Cities Fire Chief Hallett, and I've asked Councilmember Rushing to read the proclamation for us.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you.
It is my honor today to read this proclamation of Grover Beach City Council declaring October 6th through 12th, 2024 as Fire Prevention Week. Whereas the City of Grover Beach, California is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living in and visiting our city, and whereas fires are a serious public safety concern both locally and nationally, and homes are the locations where people are at the greatest risk from fire, and whereas the 2024 Fire Prevention Week theme, Smoke Alarms, Make Them Work for You, serves to remind us of the importance of having working smoke alarms in the home. Whereas roughly 3 out of 5 fire deaths happen in homes with either no smoke alarms or with no working smoke alarms. Working smoke alarms cut the risk of dying in reported home fires almost in half. And whereas smoke alarms sense smoke well before you can, alerting you to the danger in the event of a fire in which you have as little as 2 minutes to escape. And whereas Grover Beach residents should install smoke alarms in every sleeping room outside each separate sleeping area and on every level of the home and make sure their smoke alarms meet the needs of all their family members, including those with sensory or physical disabilities. And whereas Grover Beach residents should test smoke alarms at least once a month, and residents who have planned and practiced a home fire escape plan are more prepared and will therefore be more likely to survive a fire. And whereas Grover Beach, California first responders are dedicated to reducing the occurrence of home fires and home fire injuries through prevention and protection education. And whereas Grover Beach, California residents that are responsive to public education measures are better able to take personal steps to increase their safety from fire, especially in their homes. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby proclaim October 6th through 12th, 2024, as National Fire Prevention Week throughout the city of Grover Beach.
Thank you. Chief, would you care to say a few words? Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and members of the council. Just to add on to the Fire Prevention Week and give a little history to it, Prevention Week was started to commemorate the 50th anniversary of two significant fires in our nation history, the Great Chicago Fire and the Postigo Fire, which both started on October 8th of 1871. The National Fire Protection Association has been the official sponsor of Fire Prevention Week since 1922, and fire departments all over the nation take this week to educate the public, both adults and children, on fire safety measures and to try to reduce burn injuries. And with that, we will be actively involved with the burn relay for the Alicia Ann Rouge Burn Foundation that week on October 10th. And that is a foundation that was established in 1971 to also promote fire safety and also treat burn survivors. And I know we have some members here from our local firefighters association that will be making a sizable donation to that foundation as well that week. And so we're very happy for their support. And to finalize that, to commemorate Fire Prevention Week, we will be hosting an open house on October 12th at Fire Station 1 in Arroyo Grande. From 10 o'clock to 1 p.m., we'll have the national anthem sung, the honor guard from Arroyo Grande Police Department, a CHP helicopter flyover at 10:30, bounce house and fire prevention trailer for kids, and free food and beverage. The Friends of Five Cities Fire have been supportive of that event, and we'll be there handing out their defensible space and Ready, Set, Go brochures. And we'll also have County OES as well there to answer questions on emergency preparedness. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Would you all care to come forward for a photo op?
They would love to.
All right, thank you, everyone. Next on the agenda are presentations, of which we have none, so we'll move on now to the consent agenda. These are following routine items listed on this agenda and scheduled for consideration as a group. There are nine items, items 3 through 11. I'll read them briefly. 3 is Treasurer's Report, August 1st through August 31st, 2024. Treasurer's Report for the 2022 Street Bonds Bond Account, same time frame. Minutes of the City Council meeting of Monday, September 9th, 2024. Item 6, 2324 Community Grants Reporting. Item 7, Biennial Review of Conflict of Interest Code. Item 8, Acceptor of Offer of Dedication from Final Tract Map 3038. Item 9, Authorization to Purchase Ramona Garden Park Playground Equipment. Item 10, Pro-Housing Designation Program Application. And last, West Grand Avenue Streetscape 4th through 8th Street Project Change Order. Thank you for bearing with me through all of that. I will now open a public comment for any items on the consent agenda. I don't have any speaker slips, and seeing no one rush to the podium, we'll bring it back to our council members if there are any questions or comments.
No, ma'am.
Then if I might have a motion and a second, please.
Move that we accept the consent agenda as published.
Thank you.
I can second.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. This will require a roll call vote, though, if the city clerk would be so kind.
Councilmember Rushing?
Yes.
Councilmember Zimmerman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wyrick?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert?
Yes.
Mayor Bright?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. We'll move on now to our regular business. Item 12 is a public safety update. This is a presentation by Police Chief Monroe and Five Cities Fire Authority Fire Chief Hallett. Who goes first?
Well, I think I drew the lucky straw.
Okay.
I was listening to number at the top of here. So my name is Jim Monroe. It's good to see you all, Mayor and Council. I am
your
police chief. And sitting to my right is my colleague, Fire Chief Scott Hollett, who will be going here shortly. We're pleased to be here tonight to present updates on our respective departments. So the police department will go first. And with that said, as you know, the last year at the police department has been just a great year. The last few months has been a great month, although a blur. But we are doing really well. We have our feet on the ground. We're moving forward, and I hope that you see that tonight. I will make one quick note that in this presentation, there will be really no talk of community events because we were here just a few weeks ago talking about all the community events that we have put on over the last few months. And, of course, we're going to continue with that and continue to expand those. But just in case somebody is watching tonight and they don't hear any talk of community events, that would be the reason why. All right, as we move forward, I guess this is us. This is all 31 of us, both professional staff and sworn staff. Actually, 30. There's one missing, but I'll talk about him here in just a few. Very proud of this team and very proud of all we've accomplished over the last few years. We'll talk about staffing and where we're at here shortly, but very proud of this picture. And this was actually taken on June 24th, Chief Peter's retirement day and the day that I was sworn in. So special to me and a very special group in this photo as well. While you probably already know everybody on these slides, this is also for the community as well. So I just want to reintroduce myself, of course, and then our two commanders. Standing in the back is recently promoted Commander Nalita Aceves. Commander Aceves has been with the police department since about 2009. She has about 15 years of experience. She currently heads our operations division. And for those that don't know, that's everything that you pretty much see out in the community. So anybody in uniform, in a marked patrol car, along with our SWAT response and just our operations side of the house. Really glad to have Nalita as part of our team. She's a Central Coast native and has got her start at the Grover Beach Police Department and has just been here from the beginning. So she's doing great things and happy to have her on the team. The second commander is a familiar face. He's been with us for several years now, and Commander Brian Millard has approximately 27 years in law enforcement and comes from an agency here in on the Central Coast prior to arriving here at the Grover Beach Police Department. Commander Millard heads the support division, and that's kind of everything you don't see out in uniform. And so our detectives, our records, our property bureau, our crime analysts, our management analysts, and a lot of our community events and our hiring. And I'll get to that here shortly, but right now he's knee-deep in a policy revision, which I'm sure he's happy to be away from his desk. So Commander Brian Millard. And then lastly, he's not on this slide, but I'd like to introduce you to our newest employee, and this is Sergeant Jeremy Douglas. He's standing to the back there. Sergeant Douglas joined us last Monday, so this is week two for him. He joined us from the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office, where he spent, I believe, 13 or 14 years, and then was at a previous agency prior to that. So he's got a lot of experience. We're excited to have him on board. He will be actually working this week, learning on the graveyard shift as a sergeant, so fun times for him. And but he's got just a ton of experience. We were happy to get Jeremy to our team. He's got almost every instructor certification that one can have, so it's going to really benefit the Grover Beach Police Department. So excited to have him. As we move forward, this is what I'm most excited to talk about. We are, and I hate to say this because I don't want to jinx it, but we currently have no open recruitments. That is a really, really good thing. And I credit that to the council, to the community for the support, our city manager support. Not a lot of agencies can sit here and say that right now. And we have an excellent team. Jeremy was the icing on the cake last Monday when we got to swear him in. And so as you can see, we are 31 strong. We are fully staffed at this moment, and I'm really excited about that. As we move into the future, our focus is going to be on retention. And you'll hear a little bit more about that here shortly. We want to keep the good folks that we have, every single one of them. And another thing I don't really want to talk about much is that we haven't lost someone voluntarily to another agency in several years. If those that have been around, Grover Beach was once a training ground. You would come, you would get your year or two of experience, and you would move on. Thanks to your support and the community support, that is not happening currently. So we're really excited about that. So a little bit more on the state of the department. I had an opportunity to sit down with all of our employees recently, and this is what I learned. Everybody had really great things to say. They love our strong, family-oriented, community-oriented culture. We have what we need to be safe and to do the job. We have all the ingredients in the recipe, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later as well. As I said, retention is going to be our main focus as we move forward. We have all of our team members that we need. Now we just need to make sure that we keep them. And as you're aware, our customer service scores do hover around 95% every single month, and we're really proud about that as well. And so just some numbers to share with you. I'm going to lead off by saying these are numbers from January to August of 2024, and we compared those back to the same time period last year, so January 2023 to August of 2023. You'll notice there's been an 18% decrease in property offenses. That's a good thing. Those are the types of crimes that typically our patrols can help prevent. It is the middle of the night thefts from porches, breaking into stores, vehicles, that type of thing. So property crimes, it's a really good decrease. You'll notice the next one is a 13% increase in Part A offenses. Those are typically felonies. So those are crimes against persons, domestic disturbances, sometimes sexual offenses. And unfortunately, the large increase that we've seen here is primarily offenses occurring inside a home. So domestic disturbances, assaults, and some type of sexual offenses. And some of them with multiple victims that lead back 15, 20 years. That's what's increased here. We are, of course, increasing in the number of reports that we're taking, and we do see a 20% increase in traffic accidents. In looking at this data, there is no rhyme or reason, and it has nothing to do with the construction on Grand Avenue. There has been two additional accidents this year along the stretch of Grand Avenue where the construction is occurring, but we thought maybe that 20% was more along Grand. If you look at the map of where it's occurred, it's really kind of a what we call a shotgun pattern. There really is no rhyme or reason. We have seen a few increases along Farrell Avenue for whatever reason, and so we are addressing that through our traffic enforcement when we have the time to do that. So, and there has been a 12% decrease in traffic citations this year. It's not for lack of trying. I think the more reports you take and the more you're in the station and having to fill out those reports, the less proactivity time we have. Now that we are completely staffed, we are looking at options to, which I'll talk about here in a minute, add a traffic officer in the future as well. Really proud of this, as you and I'm sure the community have seen. We do have two new patrol vehicles out in the field. We're awaiting four more. One should arrive tomorrow, actually. And these patrol vehicles are, I believe, some of the nicest on the Central Coast and in California. When I say nicest, though, it's this is the officer's workspace. This is where they do their job, and it's where they spend their most time. I will note that the front windshield is a ballistic windshield. Essentially, it's bulletproof. The doors, bulletproof. That is huge if you're an officer out there working these days. We've seen time and time again where officers are getting shot through the windshield. Our officers here in Grover Beach are protected, and I know that they're very, very happy about that, along with some major technological advances. And you'll notice they're not white anymore. We did move to the historical police black and white look. It was time to do that, and it just really looks well going down the street, and I hope you concur. Our wellness program. We spent really the last year building our wellness program. This is huge. As you know, our officers and our support staff see things that the average human being doesn't and doesn't have to deal with on a daily basis, and they still have to be a human being and raise a family and take the stress home sometimes. So we're really working hard to focus on physical, mental, and financial health. And we've made some huge strides this year with a beautiful gym facility inside a storage facility where we're keeping our large vehicles. It has been an absolute hit, and we are healthier than ever before. In fact, I heard one of our employees say, none of us look worse than we did a year ago. So I guess that's a success. And we're also working with UC San Diego on a grant opportunity to help further build our wellness program and provide more peer support. We're really doing well on the physical side. Now we're working more on the mental health side. So really, really exciting. And we do allow our officers and our staff 45 minutes each day to work on their wellness and health. So moving on, we have grant opportunities that we're really lucky to have. The first one I'll talk about, which you've heard. In fact, we're just getting ready to bring this before the council, I believe, in the next meeting, hopefully, if we can get our ducks in a row with the paperwork with the federal government. It's a $543,000 technology grant. This is going to allow us to upgrade our end-of-life community cameras that are out there. We recently added additional license plate cameras. And we'll buy some multi-band radios so that we can talk to our friends in the fire department when the need arises. Really excited about that. We're currently operating with the CHP DUI grant, which has extra officers out there doing traffic work, and a traffic records grant, which will digitize our tickets and our records to help keep our officers out in the field, and a tobacco grant, which is still pending, but we expect to get that as well. So that'll be tobacco enforcement. Camping ordinance. As really the last year and some change, we've made significant progress on our camping ordinance. If you drive around the city of Grover Beach, you'll notice that you don't see what you saw, a year plus ago, especially along El Camino Real. There are no active camps that are visible from the street. We go out every Monday and Thursday and look for new camps. We do tag and we do provide resources, and that's primarily done by our community service technicians, non-sworn, that have the training to do that. So our officers, of course, do help as well. We have issued 23 citations year-to-date for camping ordinance violations, but those are not all in the camps. Those are people that potentially are camping in parking lots, in vehicles, that type of thing. As we look to the future, we have some exciting initiatives in store and in the planning process currently. We have a Citizens Police Academy that we'll be announcing here shortly as soon as the planning work is done. That will be open to the community, to anybody that's interested in learning more about the policing profession and how we do things here in Grover Beach. It's a really great opportunity to get a behind-the-scenes look and learn a little bit more. From that, we hope to grab some volunteers from that. We have a desire and a need for some volunteers at the police department. So if anybody in the community is watching or in the audience and that's something that you would be interested in, we'll be announcing that here shortly as well. And then two more things real quick in the future. We do hope to have a motorcycle traffic officer. We are currently, unfortunately, the only agency on the Central Coast that does not have a traffic officer. Most of that is because of our staffing in the past. We're good now. And then we're such a young department that we just got to make sure that we have somebody that's fully trained and capable and able to ride a motorcycle, and we're getting there. So that'll be in the future. And then lastly, we are beginning to look into a drone as a first responder program to complement our current drone program. This would be a drone that is staged, ready to go up on a rooftop 24 hours a day. And when a certain priority type call or emergency type call comes out, it would auto-launch and provide real-time information to the units on the ground. And to be honest with you, if this were to come to fruition in the future, it'd be hard to get away with any type of crime in the city of Grover Beach. Other communities are using it. They have found much success. And we've also talked to our friends at the fire department about how it could potentially apply to working fires and providing them with real-time information as well. So we are beginning our research into that. Two more slides and I am done. So the future challenges, we obviously have a growing city. If you look down Grand Avenue, we'll have some more residents here shortly. We're obviously concerned about that, making sure that our minimum staffing levels that have remained the same for the last 10 or 15 years, we're hoping to raise that minimum staffing by at least one here shortly if we can. And then I mentioned we have a young department, a very young department, and that requires increased training needs, increased training budget, and we have to get everybody trained properly so we're running a top-of-the-line organization. And so we're working down on that as well. Lastly, I want to mention one thing. We do have a facility need. And I mentioned earlier that we have all the ingredients to the recipe to be a great police department, and we do. I would say that we're missing one, and that one ingredient is a 21st century police department. And there's many reasons. I will say that currently, as we sit here today, we have three large holes in our floor and our concrete because the pipes are completely just disintegrating. So they're in the middle of working on that now, but it's a dusty mess over there. We have lack of secured parking spaces, not just for our patrol cars, but for our employees. We work in a very dangerous industry, and when you get off duty at midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, you're walking out to your car, you'd sure like to know that you're safe doing it. lack of available space, lack of available storage space, and we have no soft interview rooms for victims that are going through a tough time. So children victims, domestic violence victims. It's a very cold, old style type of interview room where that's not how things are done these days. Lastly, we have lack of training space as well. So I could put a list on here about 25 other things that we aren't that we don't currently have. But if there's one ingredient to the recipe that we're missing, I would say this is probably it. And that goes just to our retention of our employees as well. They have the tools, they have the training, they're well taken care of, but we also need to have a space where they can work comfortably, aren't crammed, and a place where we can serve our community as well that they're proud of. So that's one thing we'll be working in the next few years to try and find a solution to that issue, as you're well aware. With that, I try to go as fast as I could, and that is all I have. Once again, thank you very much for your support. We all love living here. Thanks to the community as well. And at this point, I'll open it up to questions.
Thank you. I thought maybe we would just do questions at the very end.
That sounds great.
After Chief Hallett.
All right, good evening. Can you guys hear me okay? Great job, Chief. You're a tough act to follow, but I'll give it my best. Once again, Scott Hallett, Fire Chief of the Five Cities Fire Authority. I started on April 29th, so I've been here a relatively short amount of time after the long tenure of Chief Lieberman, who happens to be in the audience with us tonight. And I appreciate all the support he's given me during my time here. Are you going to? I'm not logged in. Did it switch? There we go. It's a little slow. So a little bit about the authority. It is a joint powers agreement between the cities of Oro Grande and Grover Beach with contract services provided to Oceano. There's been a long divestiture process that's been ongoing with Oceano for the past year, and we're very close to seeing the finalization of that at the LAFCO meeting on October 17th. And that's going to give us some secured funding for the Fire Authority for that services. It's a three-year contract with 2 one-year options to renew. So that was a lot of work and a lot of effort from City Manager Bronson, retired Chief Lieberman, to get us to this point. And so we're grateful for that. With that, we do serve an area of 9.8 square miles to serve the three communities. Population a little bit over 38,000, 18,000 roughly is the city of Arroyo Grande, 13,000 for Grover Beach, and approximately 7,000 for Oceano. We're currently responding out of two stations. Part of the divestiture process is the Oceano station closed, so we're working out of the station next door in Grover Beach and then station one in Arroyo Grande on Traffic Way. Our total allocated positions is 29 full-time positions, 2 part-time, and we currently have 4 vacancies right now. So the 31 personnel is not what our existing staffing is, and I'll get into that in a moment. Our call volume year-to-date as of August 28th was 3,161 calls. So it's pretty busy. We can really compare call volume-wise to the city of Paso Robles. And we do have a slightly larger population, so that just kind of gives some relevance to what we're doing out of two stations. It is a busy station for the Central Coast. A little bit of breakdown of our response data is we're running about 1,623 calls, and this is based on our August 28th data in Arroyo Grande, 816 in Grover Beach, 524 in Oceano, and 198 auto or mutual aid calls, and I'll get more into what our auto aid response area is on the next slide. One interesting thing about this graph is what our incidents by month are, and you can see they're relatively consistent, running around 398 to 424 calls each month. Sometimes we do get questions about are we busier during the summer months when you would anticipate higher tourism in the area. And based on the data we're seeing, it's pretty even. So we don't see any significant spikes throughout the year. As far as our response area map, I'll just turn around here where I can see better. So the, it doesn't work on that screen. Maybe that one. Well, I'll stand it. So all this shaded area in the orange, yellowish color is what the
five cities response area. As you can see, Oceano, Grover Beach, and Aurora Grande. So those are our primary response areas. All this area out here in green is what's considered to be our auto aid response area. So we do have an agreement with County Fire where we respond into some of the areas of the county to support them on incidents. And in return, it's a reciprocal agreement where they'll respond into our response area to provide support. And this is primarily used for more complex incidents, such as fires. Not too many agencies on the Central Coast, if any, have the resources to handle a more moderate to high-risk incident. And so we all rely on these auto aid agreements to support one another. And that's been very evident here in the South County since my tenure here. As I mentioned earlier, we did have some vacancies, and so currently we have five firefighters in the background process, and so we're very excited about that. We had close to 200 applicants to begin that process, and through an interview process has now got down to our top five candidates. We expect their backgrounds to be done in approximately 8 weeks, with the Recruit Academy starting first part of December, mid-November, and that will be an eight-week academy. And then we anticipate them being on the floor after the first of the year. So that will give our staff some relief for sure. They've been holding the line for quite a while with those vacancies as we've gone through the Oceano divestiture process. Additionally, we concluded our shift battalion chief implementation in February. So that was actually prior to my arrival. Chief Salcy, who's in the room with us tonight, was a battalion chief when the decision was made to move to shift battalion chiefs. So he transferred from a 40-hour week to a shift position. We hired Chief Ryan Berg from the Fresno Fire Department, and then we finalized the shift battalion chief promotions with Craig Angelo, who is a longtime FCFA employee. And I'm happy to say that all three of the shift battalion chiefs are also local residents here in the South County. So that's very valuable to me as the fire chief to have them here locally. We also hired a part-time office assistant who started in May. Daniel's doing a great job assisting Tricia in the front office. We do anticipate promotional testing as part of the vacancies. The captain's testing will be in November, and I anticipate the engineer testing to be after the first of the year when our new recruits get on the floor. Additionally, as some of the specialized response teams that we have in the county, we've added some members to those teams. It provides us kind of bolstered response within the communities we serve, and also supports this regional concept of specialized response team. We added members to the county USAR team, that's Urban Search and Rescue Team, the XSL Incident Management Team, as well as the San Luis Obispo County Hazardous Material Team. And so no one agency, when you're dealing with smaller agencies, has all the resources to fully function in these capacities. So here in San Luis County, we use this regionalized response concept. Members of all the different agencies participate to some level, and that gives us the response force that we need, as well as the equipment that's needed to effectively mitigate a lot of the responses that we may see throughout the county. As Chief Monroe mentioned, retention, training, successional training is very vital to emergency services. And to date, we had completed over 5,000 hours of training in a variety of different topics. We did participate in the nuclear power plant exercise right here in Grover Beach. That was a full-scale EOC exercise. It was very beneficial to all the staff. To work together and really understand the components of emergency management. We've hosted several classes, including a firing class, and these are state fire training classes, as well as confined space. And we did recently implement an instructor service agreement with Allen Hancock College, and that will provide us some additional reimbursement on our training hours, as well as the ability to host classes through Hancock College, and students can receive college credit for that as well. So we're really excited about that agreement, and we also have a member that will be attending the National Fire Academy in the coming months as well. So we are doing our best to really support the training of our staff to fill the successional gaps that we'll see as you face retirements and things in the future.
As for apparatus and equipment, obviously a very vital asset to our service delivery. We did place new extrication equipment in service in May, I believe it was, and that was grant funded through the Office of Traffic Safety, a $50,000 grant. We have two new pieces of apparatus on order. One is the tiller, which is represented on the picture at the top right, as well as a new Type 1 engine. And these are really to replace our aging fleet. Both of those apparatus that will be replaced are beyond their 20-year useful service life, and actually it will be much beyond that by the time we take delivery in 2026. So with COVID and supply chain deficiencies, apparatus has really fallen behind on its delivery schedule, and so we're receiving these much later than what would have normally been anticipated. We're also happy to announce that we will be purchasing a new ventilation prop that was also through the support of the Friends of Five Cities Fire. We anticipate having that in about 6 to 8 weeks. That'll provide us another valuable training tool that we anticipate putting right next door at Station 2 for the time being, and will also allow that ventilation training to be more centralized within our response area so we can try to maintain and minimize our response times. We did surplus three vehicles, so as part of purchasing new fleet, you need to access older fleet, so we did get rid of three staff vehicles. And then the new Type 3 engine that was placed in service in 2023, you've probably seen that around quite frequently lately. That is a first-out apparatus currently out of Station 1 in Arroyo Grande. Primary reason for that is it's new and it's reliable, and it'll help us reduce maintenance costs on some of the older fleet. Another big component of what we do is fire prevention and community risk reduction. So as far as our multifamily dwelling and hotel inspections, we completed 270 to date, 112 of those in Grover Beach. We do the annual fireworks booth inspections. We did 12 of those total in the three communities, with four being in Grover Beach. Our annual weed abatement program resulted in 291 letters issued in the city of Grover Beach, and those were on the initial inspection. So there's a multi-inspection process to our weed abatement program. 14 lots were eventually abated by our contractor of the authority because they weren't done by the timeline that they were required to be abated. And the total assessment for those services in Grover Beach was just over $6,700. Well, I get to talk about public community engagement. So we have been actively involved in community engagement and public education. The picture here on my left is a workshop, a community workshop on wildfire preparedness. We did issue the defensible space handouts and the Ready, Set, Go. This particular picture was on Miller Way in Arroyo Grande, but we also did one on Margarita Avenue here in Grover Beach. And then the picture to my right is at Ramona Park for the Strawberries Through Grover event. This is actually us showcasing our new extrication equipment that was purchased, and I got the pleasure of being the judge for the pie contest. Additionally, we did participate in, photo to the left, the Arroyo Grande Career Day at the high school, and so we enjoy getting out and trying to recruit potentially new members of the fire department at those high school events. And then the other photo is the flyer of our open house that I mentioned during the proclamation, being October 12th from 10 to 1, and we hope to see lots of members of the community there, and certainly bring your kids. It's a very kid-friendly event. So just some goals and objectives going forward is to complete our risk assessment, standards of cover, and strategic plan. So we did receive four proposals. We put an RFP out in July, and the recommendation will go to the fire board on our meeting October 21st for the selection of that consulting firm. So we're really happy about that. All four proposals were within our allocated budget, and that'll really help set the stage for the future of the organization. As I mentioned previously, continue to provide successional training and career development for our staff. A big need for us is increased staffing to 3-0 for all engine companies. So one component of the agreement with the county for services in Oceano is we do have one two-person company, and ideally we would hope for at least three. So that'll be a goal of us going forward, and hopefully our standards of cover will reveal more of the reasons why that's important. And then lastly is just continue to meet our fire prevention requirements. We continue to work with all the communities on the fire prevention needs and requirements. One of the big ones is our state mandates from Senate Bill 1205, and that affects a lot of the multifamily care facilities, educational facilities. And so we're collaborating with all the communities to make sure we meet those requirements. And I think going forward, if we can hire a fire marshal, it'll make that process a lot more seamless and more effective. And with that, over to you for any questions.
Very good. Thank you very much. I'm going to start to my left for any comments or questions.
No questions from me. Thank you both and your whole teams for all of your service. It's an incredible asset to our community.
Sir?
Thank you very much. I'll start with fire, I think, if that's all right. So you said four vacancies on staff right now and five are in background. Is that to fill those four or is that in addition?
That's a great question. So we have an anticipated retirement in December.
Okay.
So fortunately, we learned of that during the recruitment process. And so with our backgrounds and our hiring process, that should align with the retirement of one of our individuals. And so we'll have that person trained and ready to go on staff as one leaves.
Okay, perfect. So
four vacancies and one anticipated
vacancy. So then the goal being that after everybody's through background, you'll be at full capacity.
Correct.
Excellent. That's beautiful. And you mentioned, just confirming, it's 2026 for the new Type 1 and for the tiller?
Correct.
Okay. And then in regards to the standards of coverage report, I know it's just out and we're figuring out who's going to be providing it, but my question is if you have a general sense of how long that process will take once we've decided on a firm to do that research for us.
The entire process should take about 6 months. So the community risk assessment and standards of cover would be done first, and then the very last component of that would actually be development of a strategic plan. So within the proposals we identified, our goal was to have it completed within 6 months. And then looking at those, it looks like everybody is able to meet that timeline.
Awesome. Thank you, Chief. I'll move over to fire. Second Chief. All right. Why not? Let's do this. Back to the gym space for your officers. I don't think I heard it in this presentation, but I wanted to confirm that everyone that's watching at home that all of the gym refurbishment was provided by grant funding. Was that correct?
That is correct. We received a California state grant, and that paid for all the equipment that you see.
Beautiful. Thank you. Then following up on the grant timeline, you'd mentioned a tobacco grant. Could you describe what that is and what kind of work that funds?
Yes, that's overtime work for tobacco establishment inspections. What we'll do is we'll go in and we'll make sure that that they're selling to folks that are over 18, that they're not selling vape pens and cigarettes and tobacco products to those that should not be in possession of them or at the legal age.
So. Okay.
This is not the first time we'd have that grant. It's very successful, and typically most stores and establishments in the city are, doing what they're supposed to.
Beautiful. Thank you. And then last, wanted to talk a little bit about your plans for a motorcycle traffic officer. Just confirming whether or not your plan or thought for the future would be that officer would be dedicated to traffic entirely or splitting their time with different duties, and whether or not the city has a motorcycle.
All really good questions. We do have a motorcycle. It's sitting in storage. It's very dusty, and it's about 10 years old. We did try and donate it a few years back to an agency or to any agency, but nobody would take it because motorcycle technology, I guess, has changed so much that it doesn't even it's not even worthy of a training bike. So we currently do not have a motorcycle. The position would be very similar to what Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande run. They are on a motorcycle. They are available for calls. They act as a patrol unit, but their primary daily function is traffic enforcement on the motorcycle, but it does not pull from our daily staffing allotment. So it's just basically instead of driving one of the patrol cars, they're on a motorcycle. And it's typically somebody with an interest in traffic enforcement, and that's what they enjoy.
Okay. Chief Monroe, thank you. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you. To my right, Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, first of all, thank you for all you do. Both of you keep us safe in the community. I hear great things about it. And anytime I talk to someone, they just say how professionally you are, and we really appreciate it. But Chief Hallett, does the your employee positions, what's your biggest barriers, do you feel? Is it the pay, the facilities? Are you not getting applicants to apply? What do you think is the issue?
Well, I think we were very successful with this recruitment, having 200 applicants from across the state. So the state, I don't see that we have a recruitment problem whatsoever.
So you have plenty of applicants to choose from?
Correct.
But we have four positions open?
Yeah, and the main reason why the vacancies were there is through the different promotions and some attrition. That's what created the vacancies. And there was a decision that was made to not fill them until we knew the status and the fate of Oceano.
Very good.
So it was not a recruitment issue.
Great. That's good news. Yeah. Thank you. So they'll be filled pretty quickly then, once you make some decisions. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you so much. And next question. A lot of people feel that the safe and sane fireworks are a problem for the illegal fireworks. Do you feel the same way? Do you think that because we have safe and sane fireworks here in the city, that it contributes to the illegal fireworks?
Well, I wouldn't say this is a scientific answer.
Sure.
More of a, based on my experience in the fire service for 33 years, I think it does contribute to people using illegal fireworks, because it's hard to sometimes distinguish between the two once ourselves, fire, and police arrive. So it's very easy to shoot illegals off, and then when fire or law enforcement arrive, they have their safe and sane out in the streets, and the illegals are all hidden. So it does make enforcement more challenging.
And any new ideas coming up for this next year on how to enforce illegals?
Well, we actually have an ad hoc committee that's been formed with the Board of Supervisors, and I happen to be sitting on that committee. Then we'll be meeting next month, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that meeting.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to those reports. Yep. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it. Same question to you, Chief Monroe. Thank you for all you do. The fireworks, I know the drone's been very helpful, and I know we've, I don't know if we can pass an ordinance in regards to ticketing people with the drone or not. But what are some of the new ideas coming up for that?
Good question. So this was, I guess, our most successful year using the drones. We issued 9 citations. And believe it or not, that is actually a really good number. The year prior, we were at 5. So it does require an in-person officer to actually issue that citation. So we do use the drone as a tool to identify who is lighting off fireworks. It has been a good tool, but we could always do more. We are, this next 4th of July, going to try and bring in a couple more officers to help supplement staff, not just for fireworks, but also it's a very busy night, just calls for service-wise. With a small department like we have, it is tough sometimes to find volunteers that want to come in on 4th of July, but we have a good staff and a lot of young folks that are itching for that that overtime. So that is our plan, and we, like I said, we did a lot better this year. Each year, we're refining it to try and make that process work even better. And so we're hoping that this year will be the best one yet.
Awesome. When do you think, I might have missed this, the online instant response or drone will be available?
Yeah, excellent question. That is currently active in other communities in California across the United States. It is a large financial investment. Due to just the amount of technology that you need from FAA to clear the airspace, make sure you're clear for flight, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So we are in our initial demo. We're not demoing anything, just to be clear, but we're learning from the manufacturers on what it takes to run such a program, what the cost may be. And if you'd asked me for an estimate, I couldn't even give you one for the size of the city we are. So that's how early we are in the process. But if everything were to fall into place and we could make it go, you know, we're hoping within the next year or so, we'll see how it goes.
And a lot of that could probably be grant funded as well.
We're hoping for grants, yeah. Yes, because we probably couldn't do it without that assistance.
Yeah, awesome. And our existing pilot, would he be qualified to fly that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is so we have 12 pilots currently, and this is actually autonomous. And so there is no for lack of a term, there's no pilot. It's somebody sitting at a computer screen.
Well, that's what I meant. Yeah,
in a real-time information center that is essentially flying the drone with a joystick, so something like you see in a movie.
Yeah,
it's actually happening in real life.
Yeah, awesome, great. And I suspect we have a backlog of employees looking for work then, huh? Since you're all full. So you have a choice. If you lose someone and someone quits or retires, you have someone to put them right in the spot.
I would like to think so. Okay. We have become a desired agency to work for, and that's why we're not seeing folks leave. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I wish I had 200 people applying for every open officer
that's
position, but just to throw it out there, we had an open lateral officer position open for over 6 months, and we did get a few applications, but unfortunately, we felt that those folks weren't qualified. The police service, as far as staffing and hiring, is like the fire service.
Yeah, so very difficult.
We are very happy to be where we're at.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. Thank you both. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Wyman.
Sure. I guess I'll start with Chief Howard as well. And a couple questions, and just for more for people to have context. Since some of the different apparatus and equipment, you know, is used, obviously covers the different needs of not just Grover Beach, but Rio Grande and Oceano, the different environments there too. But sometimes people do come up with questions going, why do we have this? And could you explain a little bit about as far as the revenue side of mutual aid outside the area too, and how sometimes that equipment comes in for use in those situations as well?
So are you specifically asking about the revenue side of mutual aid response or just the resource response for mutual aid?
You can touch on both of them, too, since it's an area that's not as familiar because it's not in the local area.
Okay. So as far as our local area, we have a few agreements that we can utilize for mutual aid resources if we need them or if our surrounding communities need the resources, the first one being the auto aid agreement. So us in the South County, we have an agreement with County Fire, Pismo Beach in particular. So if we have a need for resources, they're automatically going to respond to assist us, and likewise, we'll provide that same service. If we need further assistance, like we did during the fire the night of 4th of July, we had resources from Guadalupe, Tascadero, Morro Bay, San Luis. So the reach of these resources are now no longer under the auto aid agreement, but still under our county mutual aid plan. And those are basically free resources. There's no bill for that. There's no charge. And that's the way we're now. If we expand, let's say if we were to have a large wildland incident that affected East Aurora Grande, for example, we would utilize the statewide mutual aid system for those resources. And there would become a cost share agreement. So theoretically, anything within the city limit would still be on the financial responsibility of that city having jurisdiction. However, we do have mutual threat zones now established, where some of those particular areas also threat the state responsibility area within the county of San Luis Obispo and would fall under another agreement called the CFAA, California Firefighters Assistance Agreement. So that is how the nexus of mutual aid works. California has the best mutual aid system in the country for that reason, because of wildfires in particular. Now, once an incident falls under CFAA, and those are primarily under the two larger forest agencies, CAL FIRE and the United States Forest Service, there is a reimbursement process for resources. And that's how we have received mutual aid reimbursement in the past, is we respond to these incidents and we provide support, whether it be through personnel, equipment, or both, and there's a reimbursement mechanism back to us. And ultimately, the goal of mutual aid when it gets to that statewide level is that the burden of response doesn't fall back on the local agencies. And that's really what it's intended to do.
Thank you. And then just one other question is for the National Fire Academy, can you kind of explain the value that that our personnel going there brings to, since that's a distinction in its own?
Yeah, it really is kind of a special opportunity for people to go back to the National Fire Academy. It's in Emmitsburg, Maryland. right kind of the heart of where the Civil War was in Gettysburg. And they provide some excellent training, excellent networking opportunities. And so we always try to encourage staff to go back, and not just for the value of the training, but the value of the experience itself, and to be able to network with people from around the country and get different ideas as you're sitting around the lunchroom or at night at dinner. And so we're really happy that one of our members has put in a request to go and that we can support that. And then anytime that somebody goes out there and receives that training, they're always bringing that back to our own people and sharing that knowledge.
Thank you. Then Chief Monroe, a couple quick questions. Is for the traffic records grant, is that basically to transition our system so that the courts, their new system basically matches together? Since I remember when I was touring them last year, they talked about how, you know, since Grove Beach's courthouse does mainly traffic records, their clerk's part was telling me all about that too. So is that mainly the idea, or is there more to it?
That's part of the idea for sure, is to improve those workflows. Right now we still write out tickets and we have to drive them to the court. It's 2024, so hopefully we won't have to do that much longer. And on top of that, the system we're using for the officers that actually out there writing the traffic accident reports is extremely difficult to navigate, and this is what other agencies in the area use. And so everything will be able to just mesh together and go together as a package. So it should be a huge time saver.
Thanks. And then for the motorcycle traffic officer role, since they have to have extensive training, do you want to kind of briefly touch upon that? It's not just someone says, I ride a motorcycle, I want to do the job, but it's very specialized too.
Absolutely. You know, I commonly joke, we do have a young police force, and we want to teach them how to drive a car before we put them on a motorcycle. Motorcycle is a very unique tool, and it does require extra training. They do have to go to a two-week motorcycle essentially academy where they learn how to ride, and then of course they have to take a final test, and then it's continual training after that. It is one of the most dangerous jobs that you could have as a police officer. Not something I ever wanted to do, but there are folks that are interested within our four walls, and we're getting close to being able to do that. I will say that we don't currently have a motorcycle that is at a level that we could put out on the street, so we'd have to find a way to fund that. We have some ideas, but we'll be working on that as well.
Sounds like a future council agenda item.
And, probably.
And then since you're going to promote the Citizens Police Academy soon, I know I've been through a lot of different ones too. So for what's the length of the one that you're all intending, in case people think you're interested? Is it, you know, one day a week for evening for a few hours, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks? Kind of what's the range that you're all looking at so far, just so people have interest?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are still in that planning process, so nothing's been set in stone, but it would be that concept where we're looking at a once a week, or once maybe every 2 weeks type of deal, and it would be probably for 3 to 4 months, as long as we have content. We don't want to drag it out, but at the same time, we want to make sure that we're able to get all the information out there as well. So it's still in the planning process, but it has not been solidified, but we're getting very close.
Perfect. Thank you both.
Thank you. I just have two quick questions, and they are acronyms. This is for Chief Hallett. There was XSL. What does that mean?
So XSL is a three-letter designator that is assigned to our county for local government.
Oh, okay.
So throughout the state, local governments all have this designation for within your what we call their op area. And so that XSL team is a San Luis County team that consists of local government and CAL FIRE members. It's a Type 3 incident management team. Type 3 is just the type of complexity of the incidents that we can manage. And so with that team, we've had several activations over the years. Probably most notably last summer, we were part of the sheriff's office search for the young boy that was swept away in the riverbed up in San Miguel. We were activated during the COVID response to set up the vaccination clinics at the Rio Grande High School, as well as the Mid-State Fair. Of course, we are activated for wildland responses within our local area, but it is a local, once again, kind of regionally concept team, and we now have myself and two other members that serve on that team.
Terrific. Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I have one other, PIO training.
Public Information Officer.
Very good. Okay, thank you so much. Well, I too want to thank you. I'm so proud and pleased that we have such high-level public safety departments that are looking after our residents and our city. So thank you very much to you and your team for what you do. Thank you. Okay, very good. We're gonna move on to this is sure it is regular business. I'm sorry. Anyone who'd care to speak to the matter, please come forward. I don't have a speaker slip.
Mayor, I yes? do have someone on the line.
Oh, good. Thank you.
It's Mr. Bill Ray.
Hello.
Good evening, Chief Morrow. Good evening.
Good evening.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good evening, Sheriff Morrow. I was looking at your data, and you said there was a 20% increase in car accidents or whatever. You said there was a 12% decrease in infractions. I would think those numbers should be reversed. There's like a 100% difference there. And I guess my big concern is, you know, traffic enforcement. And since we don't have a traffic officer with this new motorcycle, do the new guys, the new gals, whatever, are they involved in traffic enforcement? Let's say, for example, at Saratoga and Oak Park, you could write 500 tickets a day on that intersection. Where are we at on improving traffic safety? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll get to those answers when we're done with this particular public comment session. Did I hear somebody in the audience that wanted to come forward?
It's been a long time, but here I am. First of all, I'd like to thank the police department. Sorry. I'll grow. For all the training that we had as when we served the city, I think going on the police ride-alongs, they teach you so much. And in today's world where you don't know who's walking in the door, you have to check the windows, because of those police officers, we are better well-trained because of them. And so I hope you keep that training up. So if any of you haven't gone on a ride-along, do it. And if anybody out in the public, it's well worth it, because there's so many different environment out there, totally. And I also want to thank you that a couple years ago, you know, we had protesters at the schools, and we had to be escorted home. Some people don't know that. But as they came to our houses, and I think they were mostly out of town, so I won't say they were locals, but there again, because of our police department and the time that they got to our places, we were safe in that. But in today's climate, we have to be so careful about each and every person who's out there and stuff. Same thing with the fire department. As you go along and you see all these different things, the training that you tell the kids out there with Safe and Sane and so forth, we really appreciate that. And schools can only do so much, but when you see others, and if you see it, say it. Don't be afraid. Really appreciate that. Let me see. Oh, back in the day when we did have a motorcycle officer, I think it was Sybil Hollis's husband who, yes, and the thing is old. So, yes, you do need one. And so I just want to thank you for all of that. And like I said, if you get the chance to have the training, take it. Because when you, I don't know if any of you were here when we had the killing at Denny's, and it was our UPS man, his father, you know, and every time we go into a restaurant now, I always look at the doors. Where's the windows? Are they covered? And so forth. Get that training. So, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Then we'll bring it back to council. Chief Monroe, did you want to briefly address the gentleman's question about the traffic numbers and then just talk about how officers deal with traffic?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to point out that so this time period this year, we've had 103 accidents, and then last year was 86. You know, we're a small community, but that's obviously less than one per day if you average it out over 365 days. Like I said, there really is no pattern as to why. I will say we are focused on traffic enforcement. Our young folks that are out there, that is their bread and butter. I will also say that although we are fully staffed currently, we don't have any open recruitments. We have several people that are in training and actually not out on the streets. And so we have one that graduated the academy that just hit the streets by himself. We have one that is in the academy currently. We have one that we're getting ready to send to the academy. And so just right there at the top of my head, that's three that are part of that 24 sworn number that are not actually out there working. So, and of course, our new sergeant is not out there working as well. So we don't have as many bodies actually out on the streets as we would like. We anticipate that those numbers will go up in the future with increased staffing, of course, and hopefully with increased free time. But the number of citations did decrease by 12%. That's not the number of violations. I'm sure the number of violations are, like you said, are out there. But it requires us to have the free time and the staff time to go out there and actually enforce traffic and everything else that you know, we're expected to do, the camping enforcement. And so that all takes part of an officer's day. And believe it or not, officers spend more time writing reports. And if you've been on a ride long, you've probably seen that, probably than anything else they do on a normal day. And that sometimes keeps them in the station. So there's a lot of reasons for it. But, you know, a 20% increase does sound alarming. But when you think about it, you know, going from 86 to 103, that's what happens when your numbers are fairly low like that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your time here. Oh.
Since we're in council deliberations, since we're in council deliberations, I did have one comment.
Okay. I thought we did questions and comments, but you just go right ahead.
I just switched them up to questions.
Okay.
I do want to note for DeSanto's comment that, yes, I've done the ride along with both police department and fire too, and they are very enlightening. So I do agree that people who have the opportunity should see it, since it's a different perspective coming from, you know, us reading reports, seeing things on the news, to being right there when things are happening. So I agree that's a good part as well. And I do want to thank you all and your personnel for everything you keep on doing, and especially police department for looking to start the Citizens Academy. I've gone through a lot of the local and federal law enforcement agency ones, and it's for people who are wondering what our law enforcement has to address and deal with, it provides a lot of insight very quickly. And so I think it's a good opportunity for many people who, you know, who might want to volunteer, but even others who are like, well, you know, what's really going on and stuff too? I mean, especially all the different legalities, different parameters they have to follow. And just because someone's in the crowd too, I always want to thank our other partners and stuff, such as the district attorney's office, for working with our police department and actually following through with many of the cases that your officers are working on too. So that's my comment.
Okay, thank you. So maybe I wasn't clear before. Does anybody have any other comments? Okay, very good. Thank you. All right, then. Thank you so much. We'll now move on to item 13. And this is council positions on the November 2024 statewide ballot measures. Assistant City Manager Erickson, please. Yeah,
thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. Just to give a little background on where we're at legislatively, we did adopt a 2024 legislative platform earlier this year. It's divided into 6 main sections under general government. The platform generally supports having local control and opposes any state preemption of our local authority, including for unfunded or underfunded mandates. Same in local government finance, still don't want any of those unfunded mandates. And we're also supporting legislation that protects or enhances our revenue sources. In public safety, the platform generally supports funding and support for emergency response and crime prevention. In transportation and public works, our platform generally supports funding for expedited processes for capital projects and supporting, in particular, key water supply projects or funding for implementation of organic waste disposal requirements from the state. Our resources and environment section, the platform generally supports funding for programs related to energy and water supply, as well as organic waste disposal as well. And in community development, the platform generally supports funding for programs to address homelessness and supports legislation to reform cannabis regulations at the state level. And then also, of course, we are supporting any legislation that would help protect our TOT revenues. We did have two letters of opposition that were sent to the legislature and to the governor, both for these two bills here. In general, these bills would disallow cities from self-certifying their housing elements, and also comes with some penalties if we fail to, per HCD's finding of noncompliance, even if we're in good faith and it's just an interpretation issue. So we did oppose these. We did ask the governor to veto them last week. However, the governor did sign them on Friday. So these bills will go into effect. Staff will continue, as we always have, to work very hard and diligently to comply with HCD's requirements, and we'll be looking very closely at these laws to make sure that we do that. Moving on to the ballot measures, there are three measures that we feel would have direct impacts to city operations. Each of these ballot measures are also supported by the League of California Cities. The first is Proposition 4, which is a $10 billion climate bond, would allow the state to issue those bonds to fund various programs aimed at mitigating climate change. This is in line with your other important goal of water resiliency, and it is also consistent with our legislative platform supporting legislation that increases revenue streams for our priorities. Then there's Proposition 5. This is the Affordable Housing and Public Infrastructure Bonds. This would lower the voting threshold for approval to 55% for bonds supporting affordable housing and public infrastructure, and that is a change from the current two-thirds majority that's required. This is in line with the Council's major city goal of housing and homelessness, as well as the other important goal of building and facility improvements. The city has identified up to $27.5 million in facility needs, some of which our police chief outlined for you earlier today. And so this would just provide an opportunity should a future council want to pursue another revenue stream. And then finally, Proposition 36 is the retail theft penalties proposition. It would increase the penalties for repeat retail theft. It would push back on reductions in punishment that were enacted by prior Proposition 47. And it also adds fentanyl to the list of drugs to which felony charges apply for larger amounts of possession. And this is consistent with our ledge platform as well, which supports legislation to add fentanyl to that list of drugs that have sentencing enhancements, and it also allows for greater crime reduction in the community. So the recommendation is that your council provide staff direction on whether you would like to take official positions on any of these measures or provide us alternative direction.
Thank
and
you.
I'm available for any questions.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's. We'll start to my right.
Yeah, just a general question for Proposition 4. Has staff had an opportunity to kind of delve into different categories as where the city might in particular be looking at different funding? I know you mentioned a couple of them too, but I wasn't sure if you wanted to go in more detail.
So we haven't gone into detail as staff. We don't have resources for legislation like that. But if your council were to, by consensus, want a deeper dive into that, we certainly could do that in a future meeting.
Yeah, that's my only question on these three.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. To my left.
None at this time, but I'll recuse myself from the discussion on Proposition 4 as I have a direct conflict of interest with that one. So.
Thank you.
When the time comes, as we see fit.
Very good. Thank you. And I don't have any questions as well. So we'll open this up to public communications. I have one speaker left, Dan Dow. Thank you for being here.
Good evening, Mayor Bright and Council. It's an honor to be with you. My name is Dan Dow. I'm the district attorney for San Luis Obispo County. It's great to be in beautiful Grover Beach, and I want to commend your city for having an exceptional public safety team between both your fire and your police department. It's our pleasure at the DA's office to work hand-in-hand with primarily the police department, but we also see the good work that that the fire department does. And I just wanted you to know that we do have a wonderful collaborative relationship. I think Councilmember Weirich referred to that, and I want to thank you for that. Tonight I'm here to just to urge you to join a broad bipartisan coalition of people across the state of California, but really uniquely here in San Luis Obispo County. And it's rare when we can talk about something where we have such broad appeal that people on the left side of the political aisle and the right side of the political aisle come together in agreement. And that is Proposition 36, the one that Assistant Manager Erickson just spoke to. Proposition 36 is going to provide California with some critical changes necessary so that judges and district attorneys have discretion again when it comes to repeat theft and repeat drug addiction type offenses, which will have a collateral effect, I believe, on improving some of the conditions that has led to homelessness across our state. With regard to theft, since Prop 47 passed, which a majority in California voted for, many people without necessarily knowing the unintended consequences of it voted for it because it was called Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools. What it really did was decriminalize theft that used to be able to be charged as a felony, and it reduced it to a misdemeanor, and the same for repeat drug offenses. And so Prop 36 is referred to as the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act of 2024. It's got about three different components. But before I get into all the technical aspects of that, I want to let you know that just this evening I received word from Mayor Erica Stewart from San Luis Obispo. She's now endorsed the initiative, the proposition. Mayor Karen Ray Russom from Arroyo Grande, your neighbor, has endorsed. Mayor Ed Waggy from Pismo Beach is endorsed. And the mayors of both Atascadero and Paso Robles have endorsed this. In addition, the county Board of Supervisors has put it on their agenda as a support. They've asked their lobbyists at their last meeting to voice their strong support of it. California Chamber of Commerce, California League of Cities, as you know from this presentation, has supported it. One of the things, given that you're dealing and all of the jurisdictions are dealing with decreasing revenues, I want to draw your attention to the fact that for every dollar that is stolen from one of your businesses and not paid for is a reduction in your bottom line of sales tax revenue. So not only is it harming the bottom line of that business, but it's hurting our cities who are being deprived, in our state, in our counties, being deprived of the tax revenue for every dollar that should be spent by a consumer. I see that I'm running out of time, so unless you have questions, I would just urge you to join the coalition that includes San Francisco Mayor London Breed and San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan and Supervisors John Pashong, Debbie Arnold, Supervisor-elect Heather Moreno, and Supervisors Jimmy Paulding and Don Ortiz-Legg. It's a great opportunity, I think, for your citizens in Grover Beach to hear about the importance of public safety to this city and how it can also help have a vibrant economic effect on the city as well. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you taking the time to be here. I have Andrea Seastrand.
Andrea Seastrand, resident of Grover Beach for 25 years. I can't believe the time has gone so quickly. Enjoying it. And also presently president of the Central Coast Taxpayers Association. So I would caution you with following the League of Cities endorsement of Prop 5. I know it was read and it kind of sounds nice, but I'm going to tell all of you, you remember Prop 13? Proposition 13 was passed in 1978 because there were so many, they couldn't keep up. People could not keep up with the property taxes increasing every year. Some had paid their homes off, and they lost their homes. I was a new home buyer, so I passed the petitions around way back when. And here we have this attack again. The League has always been opposed to Proposition 13, and this would be the two-thirds vote to raise your property taxes. And they want to reduce it again to 55%. I would say in the state of California, you can pass anything on 55%. So I am cautioning you, to think about your constituents, property owners, seniors, renters, commercial property owners. How are they going to be able to keep up? And this includes the two-thirds vote for the county, for cities, for schools, for all of the different entities within our county or within our state. So I would caution you to not support, or I guess I'm saying I would not support Proposition 5. I would oppose it. For the sake, your public servants, you're sitting there watching out for your forgotten taxpayers and your property owners, and I would say this is a step in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a general public comment. Okay. That's it. Anyone else?
I do have someone on the line.
Oh, excellent. I just want to make sure we don't have anyone else in the audience. Okay. Let's go to the phones. Thank you.
I have Brenda Auer on the phone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Brenda Auer calling. I have to mirror Andrea. Prop 5 is a no vote. It will affect Prop 13. And I'm really kind of shocked this evening that the city is actually recommending things without explaining all of the intricate things that go with it. It's real important that we understand what Prop 5 will do to Prop 13. And if you don't know, I want you to go back and educate everyone, please. Prop no is a no vote. Most of these things that are being voted on are actually going to raise our property taxes. Even though it's called a grant, don't be deceived. It comes in the form of property taxes. Also not mentioned here is a vote for G24, which will help you reduce your water rates. And very important, you vote for Prop G24. Again, I'm really kind of saddened that this Prop 5 was not explained and the importance of it to taxpayers. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no other public comments, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. Does anyone have questions? I'll start to my left.
Oh, I was just going to ask if you wanted to take these one by one. And then,
oh, of course,
and I
can yes,
either,
I'm sorry.
We could do the Prop 4 at the beginning or the end. Doesn't matter to me, but I'm happy to step out for the discussion.
Why don't we do, let's just do the Prop 5 and 36 now, and so you can give your input, and then you can recuse yourself when we talk about 4.
Very good.
Okay, yeah. Excellent. So would you care to speak to to these two propositions in any way? Have any questions?
Oh, gosh. Just questions right now, right? So no questions for me at the moment. I have some comments that I'll share eventually.
Okay. No. Okay. I have one. I wanted to, if we could get clarification. I'm reading here where it's, this is Proposition 5, this voter approval for bonds used for affordable housing, permanent supportive housing, or public infrastructure. Can you just elaborate on that just a little bit?
So it is fairly broad, but public infrastructure would include public facilities and infrastructure in support of affordable housing, as well as affordable housing projects. It is a funding source that the city could pass. It would go to a vote for the measure. It would still have to pass by 55%. This wouldn't automatically change anything in our city's property taxes without action by the council to put it on a future ballot.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right, then. I think that unless did you want to have some conversation? I know this is a little out of the ordinary, but since Councilmember Zimmerman is going to recuse himself on item 4. If we can just have a council discussion on 5 and 36, if we could.
Well, I'm in favor of 36, but can we explain a little more in regards to Proposition 5, how that would directly affect our taxpayers here in Grover Beach? I understand that if it does pass, then if the threshold would move down to 55%, But we would not raise anyone's taxes without actual counsel.
So this ballot measure itself wouldn't change anything with property taxes in the city. It would take an additional action of the council to place a measure on the ballot, and that measure would then be voted on by the voters, and it would have to get 55% of the vote.
Well, personally, I've always been in favor of any type of tax raising should be done with two-thirds of a vote, so I'm not so sure that I'm in favor of this. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, for Prop 5, I mean, it's similar to the school facilities one. I get that, too, and it's very limited to a few different things. And always the catch with propositions like this is, well, first off, it has to be adopted by voters statewide. So that's always the one dynamic, and we're just recommending positions. But, I mean, I've had different issues when it was going through the process to get to the ballot of some different nuances, too. So I'm not the most excited about it and stuff in this time, too.
Okay. Thank you. Jamila?
Thank you very much. excuse me. I haven't spoken in about 10 minutes. excuse me. So in regard to Prop 5, I'm following where you all both are at this point. And I think my ask question at this point is, in lieu of support, can we just do nothing on this one? I don't feel comfortable coming out directly opposed to it, but taking no action I'd be fine with.
I guess I'd be all right with that, too, as far as Prop 5 goes. I think that it is something that's kind of an individual voter's choice at the state level, it seems to me. And while, of course, it would affect Grover Beach, so would every single proposition on this list in one way or another. And I think that's something that this body has talked through quite a bit as far as, you know, some other speakers we've heard in the past speaking to, you know, regional, national, international issues. And we've decided that that's not in the purview of this council. So I could see Prop 5 kind of falling under the same arrangement. And then when it comes to 36, then that one's really tricky for me because I think that it's very well intentioned. And I think there's, of course, everyone wants to get fentanyl off the streets. And I think that the penalties for that should absolutely be increased. And I think it's also at the same time really heartening to see the local police enforcement and what's done. And that, as was mentioned by the chief, that there was actually an 18% decrease in property crime here in our city last year. So I think that's noteworthy as well. I just am of the mindset that local enforcement as it's currently being done is a little bit more effective than what some of the things in this proposition promote, including putting a lot more people back in jail and putting in the neighborhood of hundreds of millions of dollars of prison cost back on the backs of taxpayers. And that's a major concern of mine. So that's kind of the flip side I see in that. And I could see this also being something that we decide is not in our purview, but I'll leave my thoughts there.
Thank you. Did you have something else?
I guess I was wondering if perhaps we could get Chief Monroe up here for a couple of questions. Is that possible, sir? I'm glad you're here, still here, sir.
Yes, sir.
So just in general, while our property crimes are down over the last year, I know that in the past when I was on ride-alongs with your officers at the same time, too, there's always been a lot of frustration based on the previous ballot measures about what your police force can do and what they can't do and the instant recidivism that you see out on the streets. So I'm not necessarily asking for your position on it, but just wanted to make sure how your officers and how your department feels about the best way for them to do their jobs. Would this kind of a ballot measure be something that would give your officers a better amount of tools to do your jobs and to keep our citizens safe?
Yes, very good question. So I'll talk about two specific reasons why this would be helpful. Number one would be currently right now, we cite people for drug offenses, fentanyl, cocaine, methamphetamine, whatever it may be. It's a traffic citation, and to be honest with you, and the DA's here, and to no fault of their own, but there's not a lot they can do there. There's not a lot of consequences. When prior to Prop 47 going into place, we would essentially do the same thing. At that point, they were considered felonies. But rarely were they charged as felonies because they were able, the DA and the court was able to charge those as misdemeanors if the person went to court-appointed treatment. They basically held that felony over their head. And it allowed a lot of people to go to court-appointed treatment, which is not currently happening right now because there's no consequences if they don't. That's what we're seeing out there. The other would be the theft. As you know, you can walk into Miner's Ace Hardware and steal $949 worth of equipment, whatever it may be. And if we catch you, we're going to come and write you a traffic citation and tell you, obviously not a good idea. Please don't do it again. Here's your court date. And typically you walk away. That's what's happening. Not to say that that would change a lot unless you were two times convicted of that. That's what Prop 36 would do, but it is another tool in the tool bag. For me as a police chief, knowing that we have a major addiction problem that we are dealing with every single day in the camps and with our unhoused community and just with the community in general, knowing that there is a potential for them to seek treatment, to be essentially remanded to treatment, is something that I think is a positive. That is not something that's currently happening right now.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. So you had a comment?
Yeah. Since I only spoke to Prop 5 and stuff, I want to talk about Prop 36. And so for this one, I do have a support position I would like us to see on it, too. And to address Councilmember Zimmerman's part, too, that, yes, I'm one of those people who will easily say, let's not return to the days of mass incarceration. And we've moved so much further since then, too, as far as actual treatment and rehabilitation part of it. And that's something the chief just mentioned on the recovery side, too, for substance use that, yes, I read our recovery on the proclamation, too. In person recovery, I've seen people actually go through our court treatment programs before, too. I know the district attorney has been a part of the treatment court when it got established. We've had a lot of different subparts to see that. And it's one of those areas that is difficult that I've had a lot of conversations with people about this, which is, okay, well, if the courts and others, put them into treatment, how successful will they be? Fortunately, I've seen a lot more people die than and stuff who don't go to those parts. And so I do think that is a method to get people back on track of their life too. And it's funny. A lot of times when I've gone to those graduations, that people will actually say that they're like, well, who would have guessed that being arrested was the best thing that would happen in my life? I mean, so there is that part of it that does come into play too. And like I said, with the way that we do things more. And probation, also with a lot of our different nonprofit partners and stuff, that I think we're in a different place where that's not the way it's just going to fall and default back to. And so I do understand where you're coming from too, because I grew up with, with that was kind of the narrative at a certain point too. But I think where we're at today too, it's a different environment. Our leadership too, within our different aspects of law enforcement in the district attorney's office, are a lot more collaborative, especially within this county too. So. Yeah, I hear you. Like I said, I think we're in a different place, though, that could be helpful. And yes, the retail crime part, it's that became super obvious, unfortunately, very quickly after Prop 47. And that hit our county and our city, too. The unfortunate part about Prop 47, and then Prop 36, all these is that once the first one's adopted by voters, then to change it, you have to get the next one adopted by voters. So I know it is a tricky part, too, that if there are different things that don't work, I'm sure we'll see another proposition that'll come up in the future, too. It's just the nature of how, these propositions that are approved by voters statewide go. So as long as, we as a community are diligent on making sure that the things we want to see happen continue to move forward and the things that we're concerned about, we keep an eye on, then I think that the concerns that you're bringing up to will ultimately be addressed. Different day, different positivity. It sounds a little optimistic on my end too, but luckily I've seen a lot of the different partners who work in this field, in this sphere, make a lot of progress. So that's my take on it.
Thank you.
Quick comment.
Certainly.
This may add some cost to our prison systems and police forces, but remember, as our own district attorney Dan Dow just testified, that these costs, I'm sure, which is less than 0.5% of the total budget for California, will be offset by the savings that we would increase from the tax revenues that we would receive from stopping this horrendous craziness, and also the theft in itself to our local businesses. I just think it's ridiculous that people can do this, just walk in and take $1,000 worth of merchandise and walk out and get a traffic ticket. And that adds up to hundreds of millions of dollars each year just in merchandise and our sales taxes suffering. So we're losing a lot of revenue. Dan Dow, would you like to speak?
Would it be okay if I address one of the issues that you're
Of course.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I appreciate Councilman Zimmerman's inquiry and concerns about the increased incarceration. What I want to make clear is Proposition 36 is not opening the floodgates to state prison. What it's doing is on the third theft or the third drug offense, it opens up the ability to have a 18-month, 2-year, or 3-year term at the county jail. So what's the difference? Well, state prison, of course, is a much bigger institution. It's where people go to become, sadly, many become institutionalized by the prison system. And this doesn't mean they're going to do that long of a time in our county jail just by giving us that hammer, if you will. What it's going to do is it's going to raise the stakes, as the chief mentioned, so that the judge now has the teeth to be able to encourage by way of I just call it encouragement by saying if you don't do this and you don't succeed, then you're going to have to, you know, take a time out from the community in the county jail. But it will not go to the state prison. And I can tell you that our sheriff, Ian Parkinson, understands that it will likely increase the population in his county jail. He's prepared to deal with it because what he has seen is that the population currently in the jails are ones that have not been getting treatment. And so when they come to the jails, they're in worse physical condition, worse health. They're more likely to have significant health issues and, God forbid, in fact, he gave the numbers at a meeting last week. Hundreds of people now from the jail are riding in ambulances to the local hospital ER rooms because of the people that are coming in with these addiction issues that have been untreated. So in my opinion, it will not increase the state prison population except for in a few very minor areas, and that is if someone is dealing the hard drugs like fentanyl, methamphetamine, or cocaine, and they're possessing a firearm, it is going to allow them to go to state prison. Today, they're only going to the county jail, even though they're dealing drugs with a firearm. And so, again, we consider that more serious because they're also, you know, using the firearms in the community to sell the drugs to many youth in our communities across the state. So I hope that I've at least addressed some of your concerns. I think they're valid concerns. I love the work that Casa Solana is doing in our community and Restorative Partners with Sister Teresa. I want to give the judges the ability through this to really put some pressure on those that need the help. As Councilman Wyrick has said, I've heard many times that our Veterans Treatment Court or our drug court graduations, the folks actually thank the prosecutor and thank the probation officer for being tough with them because that's what it took for them to finally get the treatment that they wanted. And I want our drug treatment courts not to be filled because there's drug problems, but I want them to be filled with the people who currently are out on the streets and suffering. So thank you.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Ms. Dow.
Additional information. So for me, as the mother of my son is a sergeant at the county jail. He's been there for a number of years. The stories I hear is unbelievable, particularly with the revolving door type of situation. And so I am certainly in, I definitely would support 5. What? I'm sorry. 36, yes, sorry. I'm losing my whole train of thought here. I'm terribly sorry. So, yes, 36 definitely has my support. 5, I'm kind of ambivalent. I will go with how our council would like to go. So I guess we're just going to need to take
looks like we're just giving.
We're just giving direction. Yeah. So I guess that I've heard that we do support 36. I'm not sure.
I think there's a consensus on the dais, and I'm happy to abide.
Very good. And then five?
No position on
yes,
five?
Yes, I think that would be sufficient. Yeah. Okay. Very good. All right, fine. Then, and we will now allow you to...
So, Mayor?
Oh, thank Mayor. You, everyone.
Hey. Oh, before that happens, as far as taking an official position on Proposition 36 before Councilmember Zimmerman leaves, do we want to do that right now, or do we want to do that all
we're just
at the
giving
end?
Them... We're just giving direction.
Yeah, there's okay. No vote necessary.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay, so now we can move on to item four. Does anyone care to start the question portion of this, or we want to just go to discussion here?
Sure, I'll get down to discussion too. It covers a lot of the different areas that we have to deal with. I mean, obviously, it does note, stormwater capture, reuse, water, local water conservation, state fire, prevention. I mean, all these different areas that do impact our city in some different form or another. I mean, the big question of if it passes, are those programs sent in a way to where our city would be able to access them too, and then put it to good use? Yeah, that's always a bigger, deeper dive too, as the Assistant City Manager Erickson noted too. However, the basis of it, I think, could be, supportive in achieving all of our city goals and needs that we've been looking at too, and obviously talking about for a while. So that's where support apart for me comes into play.
Okay. Appreciate that. Mayor Pro Tem? Sir?
I would agree with Councilmember Wirecare.
As do I. Okay. So is that sufficient? Very good.
Thank you.
All right, then. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for sitting through all of that.
Should we call him back? Then,
oh, yes. Councilmember Zimmerman back somehow. Okay. Oh my. Well, we can just call a 5-minute recess. Well, we bring Mr. Zimmerman back into the room. Oh, there he is. Okay.
Recess over. I'm not sure what it was. Second recess.
Somebody mumbled up there.
Only what?
We can talk about it during public comment. Okay. Okay. So we are now going to move on to public communications. However, did want to briefly discuss this, if you will please bear with me a moment. Okay. Regarding public comment, I have been giving it a great deal of thought, hearing a lot of comments from all over, not only our city, but others. Public comment is actually what got me involved in city matters 20-some-odd years ago. And it truly has changed my thinking on some of the various topics that have come before the council. Cannabis was one, for an example. I immediately thought no. I saw what dispensaries did when I lived in the San Fernando Valley to the neighborhoods, and I just felt that wasn't what we needed. However, public comment changed my mind. Law enforcement, the safety officers, athletes. Anyway, it was incredibly compelling. And so all that to say that I am recommending that we restore the 15-minute public comment session during the first part of the meeting. I heard people talk about not having to come early or whatever it is. But the fact is that if it enables just one person to have to be able to come and speak when they wouldn't be able to otherwise, I believe that it is valuable and important. So it will be on our agenda for our next meeting. And very good. So thank you all for letting me go on like that. Now, I have one general public comment from Leslie Marr.
Good evening.
My name is Leslie Marr, and I live on Farrell Avenue. So I want to take a moment to address the recent comments made by Mayor Bright regarding Debbie Peterson, the 2024 Central Coast Taxpayer Hero Award recipient. While I respect the mayor's perspective, I was disappointed to see her comments in the New Times, where she had an opportunity for unity but chose divisiveness, for directly blaming Peterson for various issues. It's important to remember that personal attacks undermine the professionalism we should uphold in local government. Mayor Bright has consistently lectured us on decorum and respectful discord, so I expected more from her in this situation. In her remarks, the mayor stated that's the result of Debbie Peterson in the way she does business. This kind of rhetoric creates division rather than fostering constructive dialogue. Additionally, the mayor mentioned Grover H2O, the group founded by Peterson and many others to oppose the water rate increase. She noted that some locals feel uneasy about sharing their views at council meetings, while highlighting that is a critical issue of our community, must feel safe and supportive when voicing different opinions. While walking, knocking, and talking, I heard from several constituents about not getting involved due to potential city hall retaliation. A healthy democracy thrives on diverse perspectives, and we should encourage open dialogue. However, it's understandable for constituents to feel frustrated and resentment when voices are not heard. In her closing remarks, the mayor expressed her belief that if Peterson were elected, our city would regress. Instead, she positioned Dee and Robert as preferable choices. While I respect her endorsements, it's valid for us to consider all candidates based on their merits and vision for the future, rather than allowing fear and divisiveness to dictate our decisions. As we focus on community and moving ahead, let's emphasize unity, transparency, and betterment of our community. Let's prioritize respectful discord and ensure every voice is heard, regardless of differing opinions or presentation demeanors. Together, we can work towards a brighter future for our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Please come forward. If you'd be kind enough to state your name.
Deborah Tepper, Grover Beach.
Thank you.
I need a point of clarification. I did not understand what Councilman Zimmerman recused himself from. I was trying to follow along, and I got lost.
Okay.
So if I could have clarification.
We will do that once the public comment session is
ended. Thank you very much.
Ended. You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
Elizabeth Dukas, North Grover Beach. I would like to echo Leslie's comments. And we don't come here and spend our time because we're trying to do anything negative. We're here to do a positive. All of us, we're involved in our communities for the positive. And when you do your business, you're doing our business. This is the citizens' business. And we would expect you to respect how it is conducted. And when you gavel off people, when they're just trying to say things, that does no one any good. All it shows is that there is something there that is just not right. And when you have dedicated public servants asking you, begging you for time, for consideration, that should be of your utmost concern. Whether it's two people, one person, 10 or 20, it doesn't matter. We are here for our future, and that is what the most top consideration should be. We're all in this together. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I didn't realize the Central Coast Taxpayers Association would come up in the conversation.
Would you mind just stating your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Andrea C. Strand, president of the Central Coast Taxpayers Association. We're a nonprofit, 501c4. Our mission is to bring about more accountable effective, efficient government, and fair and equitable taxation, which permits a strong, healthy economy, sensible balance, and rational control of government expenditures. We take no government funds. Our board members are very diverse, and I would just say that independent citizens and such donate to our cause. I was here tonight to say that we are awarding the Golden Fleece Award to the City Council and its administration. The Golden Fleece Award is basically given to you this year because in 21, the City of Grover Beach implemented the five-year plan of annual water and sewer rate increases, promising it would fully fund the Central Coast Blue Recyclable Wastewater Project. And after paying $3 million for the project in September 2023, Grover Beach water and sewer customers received a city letter announcing a rate increase that would double their water and sewer rates every 4 years to pay for the project that had skyrocketed from the early estimate of $24 million to $99 million. And when 2,000 families wrote to the city protesting the increase, the city council raised rates anyway and then illegally blocked recall initiative in response to the increase, approving an estimated $200,000 of ratepayer funds to defend city election violations and losing in the courts. The city council reduced some of the water rates when it withdrew from the project when it reached $160 million, but did not withdraw the scheduled 2021 Central Coast Blue project rate increases or the sewer increases for the project. So I'm sorry to say that we just believe that we need to raise this issue with the ratepayers, the taxpayers in the city of Grover Beach. And again, to remind you, you're the public servants. You're elected by them to follow and to inform them as they go along. So thank you very much for my ability to say some of the words today. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the? Please come forward.
Dee Santos, I almost forgot why the reason I came tonight, but I know some of you were taking the heat for having the playground equipment at Ramona Garden Park. Well, you guys don't take all the heat because when we served on the council, that was part of the plan. So thank you for finally getting that done. It's for the kids of our city. Also, you know, we had the skateboard park. We had the Ramona Garden Park. We had the tennis courts. So there's a lot of things we have done for our youth in this community. So I just want to thank you. That. It makes better schools, too.
Thank you. Okay, I've seen known, and have we someone on the line?
What? Yes, I have Brenda Auer on the line.
Thank you. Hello?
Well, good evening again. And Mayor Bright, I want to thank you very much for bringing public comment back to the beginning of the meeting, at least for 15 minutes. I think it's really important for our seniors, people like myself that have a hard time sitting for two and a half hours. But I want to ask, why can't we do that this next meeting? It was changed to the end of the meeting without any notification. I understood that was maybe your decision or the managers, city managers, but I think you can change that now rather than putting it on the agenda. I would appreciate that. And again, I do thank you for addressing that. Also, with the Golden Fleece Award, as you all heard the explanation, keeping our water rates reasonable is real important. So a yes to G24 is very important that the community understands. Yes to G24 protects you from having your water rates doubled. If the city wants to raise the water rates, let's have a new proper 218. I've said it before. We don't have to vote on it. You all have the ability to bring it to council and resolve this. Until then, yes to G24. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you. Yes, please come forward.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Steve Lieberman, Grover Beach. I almost went the entire meeting keeping my mouth shut. I was just hoping maybe the city attorney or the mayor could explain that during an election season, there's certain places where we can't campaign, such as public facilities. So I think Ms. Auer's comments, they were hers, but they were inappropriate for a public meeting. Otherwise, we would have public meetings full of campaign announcements. Thank you.
Thank you. City Attorney, would you care to say a little something?
So what I will say is that during public comment, it is a First Amendment right for individuals to speak about things that are within the city's purview. The issues regarding campaigning essentially will apply to council members and the use of government resources in such campaigns. And so the public has more leeway in terms of, you know, what they can say during public comment, far more so than council does being able to say it from the dais.
Thank you. Okay. So we had a couple questions. We'll close public comment now. And if Councilmember Zimmerman, would you mind explaining why you recused yourself?
Sure. Yeah, we were talking about Proposition 4, and if that was to pass, then it would have a direct impact on my current place of employment. So that's why I recused myself.
Thank you. Okay. Did you not hear?
No. Oh. We were wondering what is Proposition 4, and it's a $10 billion environmental-related bond that's put on the state ballot this upcoming November.
Okay. Welcome. And then Brenda Auer had talked about public comment, and it will be reinstated at the next meeting. Did I miss any other questions? No? Okay.
Can I throw a public comment idea out there? No? Okay.
Well, why don't we do that during council committee, council communications?
Okay. Very good.
Okay? Yep. All right. Very good. Okay. So we'll move on now to council committee reports. And how about if we start to my left with Councilmember Zimmerman?
Sure. I unfortunately missed the last Rise and Shine. I wasn't able to make it for the South County Chamber of Commerce, but they are having their next mixer coming up this Wednesday at Vespera, so always a nice time getting together with them, and that is the only committee report I have right now.
Thank you. Councilmember Rushing?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I will cover Zone 3 today. I will defer to Councilmember Wyrick for Five Cities Fire Authority, as he is the vice chair of that board. Zone 3, which manages the San Luis Obispo County Flood and Water Conservation District, a.k.a. Lake Lopez, met just a few days ago here in Grover Beach City Council Chambers. After 2 years of rain, we are still in a strong position on Lake Lopez with approximately 45,000 acre feet in storage, which is approximately 90% of total capacity for that reservoir. Our budget is on target as of now. We've had a few unexpected costs, but those have been offset by lower than expected maintenance costs on a few other items at the same time too. There were no action items on this past agenda, and our next meeting will be on November 21st, 10:30 a.m. in the Arroyo Grande Chamber. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mayor. At a meeting September 11th, the Integrated Waste Management Authority, we had put out a residential outreach survey report that you could take online at the IWMA.org if you'd like. And it is basically educational for people to see how well they do at recycling. And we got back the results of the survey, and basically the bottom line, people are confused. Mm-hmm. So, and it's our job to straighten that out, and we're working on that. We also awarded a technical assistant grant, which the IWMA offers these TAGs, we call them, technical assistance grants, to support waste reduction and landfill diversions, efforts for businesses, government agencies, and nonprofit groups. And this time we gave out $10,000 to the city of Pismo to install a couple of water bottle refilling stations like we have down the hallway. And that helps get rid of plastic bottles. We also discussed the litigation platforms like we did tonight. And although we've never taken or supported any positions before, we decided not to, to carry on that way and not support any, because we're not really a political organization, more of an educational organization. And we had a closed conference with real property negotiations regarding specific property matters. And hopefully I'll be able to bring that back to you at our next meeting and tell you what we decided to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Myrick?
Yeah, just one quick report for the Five Cities Fire Authority Board of Directors. We had a special meeting last Monday, September 16th, and it was to approve an agreement on the assignment and amendment of Oceana Community Services District's ongoing CalPERS liabilities to the County of San Luis Obispo. This is just a technical part, too, as part of all the different aspects of having to go to the county. So it was all worked out, but it was just something we needed to take care of. Thus, the meeting was very short.
That's it? Okay, very good. I don't have any committee reports, so we'll move on now to council communications. I'll start to my left again, sir.
All right. Well, first, I guess I will follow up with that idea for bringing back public comment, and I think that that's a fantastic idea to at least have a segment of it at the beginning of the meeting. And the one thing that crossed my mind, and this is in no intention whatsoever of stifling people or anything like that, but I wonder if for the intro comments, if we allowed 15 people to speak for a minute, so that's a 15-minute window, so we were able to hear a more diverse spectrum of voices in the community, and then afterwards kept to that 3 minute, as I don't propose any other changes to the structure, but I wonder if that intro period, so if there was somebody who's just, you know, wanted a quick answer on something or wanted to just make their voice heard for a brief statement and then, you know, go on with their day, then I wonder if, just kind of thinking from my perspective, you know, being on the other side of the dais, which I will be soon, then just I can imagine that being something I would really enjoy as a citizen and also as a council member, hearing from as many people as we can could be something to consider. So that's one I would throw. That came to my mind just as far as revamping public comment. And then another one that I will bring up to the just council consideration is Grover Beach's community radio station, KYXZ, our little low-profit, low-power nonprofit station right down the street here, had the unfortunate event where there's a thing called the studio transmitter link on top that goes from where the music is played and goes to where the station broadcasts from. Turns out, between that building and the little antenna on top of the Napomo Mesa, there is a building called Cleaver and Clark Commons that is in the direct line of sight, which the transmitter link needs. So I just wonder if we could consider them in future. I don't know what the needs look like. I don't have an update on the project, but I know it's station's currently off the air. It is a station that's broadcast these council meetings in the past and is really an asset to our community. So I just wonder if there's an opportunity to maybe afford them some kind of assistance in the future. So just throwing that out for consideration as well.
Thank you.
And that is all for me.
Thank you.
I have no comments.
Thank you. Mayor?
I'm not so sure about the minute.
I don't know that we can really get too far
just
in,
my comments.
Into
okay.
this, correct? Yes.
Yeah, my concern, okay. I don't think we get 15 minutes.
I will just say that I would generally advise against such a short time window.
Okay, very good. May I say something about the fleece award? Okay. Ms. Seastrand might not be aware of the fact that we did roll back the water rates. We did get out of CCB, and we did do what we feel was in the best interest of our community. So to give us the fleece award for that, I think she's mistaken. I'd like to just say that. And as far as I can't speak on that. Never mind. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. I'll go back to my normal things, which is I did attend a few different things since our last council meeting. One that several of us attended was our ribbon cutting at Mentone Basin Park's pickleball courts. And yes, I'm not the biggest person up to play pickleball. However, it was great to see everyone else participate too. And it was clear from a lot of the residents and different people who are there too, especially some of our seniors and others who it really sparks through too, that they were having a lot of fun and they're very grateful for it to be there. So I think it's a good asset. you know, in South Grover Beach that all the rest of the city and community could use too. So it's good to be there on Thursday, September 12th. And then a little bit later on, for the Dune Run, our city's Dune Run, and walk, I emphasize the and walk part because, yes, I was, as a joke around the last meeting too, I was going to be the walk person and I had a bunch of phone calls to make too, so I ended up working out just fine too. So even though I didn't medal, because apparently there was plenty of people in my age group who participated this time around, which is a good thing too. It was also good to see actually a lot of the different people from different ages make it. And yeah, that one lady at the end too, she was that. I hope when I'm her age too, I could make it that far too, because that was quite impressive. And the only other thing too is this past Saturday, EcoSlow had their annual San Luis Obispo County Creeks to Coast cleanup, and there was one at the end of West Grand Avenue that was hosted by the San Luis Obispo County Tobacco Control Program. So I was participating in that, but then also there was like a Girl Scout troop. There was a lot of different families. There was a lot of people who participated. So by the time, yeah, I was really looking at where to find the trash too. Ironically enough, it tended to be the areas that where all the bonfires and trash cans are too. It's always never ceases to amaze me how the areas where people know it's, their trash is going and can throw away too, they don't do it. But they picked up a lot of different bags to clean up our beach for our community to enjoy too. So those are the three things I reported from the last time.
Thank you. I know the beach cleanups, we used to count the cigarette butts. It was amazing. It's truly amazing. Well, I think Councilmember Wyrick pretty much touched on all the things that I attended as well. So, City Manager report and comments?
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to update your council on some of our upcoming events. We do have Movie in the Park this Friday at 16th Street Park. The movie is going to be set to start at 6 p.m., and they are showing the movie Elemental for the family. So bring some blankets and some cozy chairs and come join us at that. We also do have another Coffee Talk public engagement meeting, which will feature the city manager, and this time our chief of police will be joining him, as well as the mayor, and that will be held on October 12th at 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., and I believe this one will be at Ramona Park. And then also, we do have an upcoming event for our Trunk or Treat, our annual Trunk or Treat, which the city hosts along with Grover Beach Rotary Club, and that will be on October 25th from 5 p.m. until it gets dark. So bring your kids out for some fun there. They always have some really great trunks to visit. And that is it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on now to City Attorney report and comments.
Nothing to report, Mayor.
None to report. Closed session. Where is none? So we're going to adjourn our meeting. Thank you all very much for attending.